You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. I've been performing outside today and registering people to vote. It's the last day in New York City at this moment to register to vote and have it count in the primary. You have to be a new voter to be able to vote in this primary right now. If you're changing... Oh, whoa, Keats. These were here already on the bench.
Who gave that to us?
This is a little yogurt drink, and this is some melted ice cream. Nobody gave it to us. What are you doing with your shoes?
Because I want to, and they're all sandy.
Okay, so you're playing in the sandpit. Do you want me to take your socks?
No.
Let me take your socks. Keats, let me take your socks. They're going to get ripped up. I've been registering people to vote. I'm at the playground with Keats. I thought I would give you a little update. I had to leave what I was doing in order to come and pick him up, which is a nice thing to have to do. It's nice to engage in the citizenry, the body politic, and then be pulled away from it for just a very simple human reason. Like, so now I just got a call, and I've answered it, and I'm back. And usually, when I'm recording, I silence the devices so that I won't be interrupted. We were talking about registering people to vote. Oh, and being a citizen and picking up your son, your child. So this, it struck me just that everything that I was doing is kind of up for grabs, even though it's very ordinary stuff. So, you know, there's this universal pre-K now, which has only happened just now in New York City. So if there wasn't this universal pre-K, I would have nowhere to take, I would not have been able to do what I did today, which was registering people to vote. Because I would have been with my son, and I would have been able to go, I mean, he would have done that with me for a little while, actually. But then he would have, you know, in fairness to him, he would have wanted to do something else, and we could have been registering in the playground, but there are limits to people's attention in that environment. So there was the picking up the sun, and then the registering people to vote at all. Like in some states, you have to be registered like way in advance, or you have to go in, or you have to have ID, or there's all these impediments. Or if you have, I think if you owe money, like sometimes if you owe even parking tickets, you can't vote. There's things like that. There's ways of disenfranchising people. Or if you have a certain types of criminal record, depending on the state, you can't vote. It used to be you had to be 21. Now it's 18. The vote has, with the progress of our democracy, voting has become more and more universal. You know, it used to just be landowning white men in the early days. And then it expanded, you know, bit by bit by bit, eventually. And then lately, in this century, it's expanded more, and even the age has been reduced. Because, you know, if you can die for your country, you should be able to vote and affect its politics. Imagine how many Vietnam, like, kids were being sent to Vietnam and dying over there and not being able to vote for a president who wouldn't send them over there into a nonsense type of situation. It's funny to have wars after the nuclear bomb. It's almost just like killing for the sake of killing, just to kill. Because there's no, in a way, the nuclear bomb makes any contest ultimately a moot contest, like an unwinnable contest. Any violent contest is unwinnable. I've always thought that about violence. Like, I haven't... If somebody wants to fight me, I've... Except for when I was a kid. Like, I didn't... You know, you just try to, like, take it in a different direction. Because ultimately, you both get hurt. Usually. And then you never know what can happen or how hurt you can be or, you know. So... But we, unfortunately, we live in this... In an arrogant... in a sort of underneath a culture of arrogance. I don't know that we have that. We, the people, or like, you know, the average American, may not suffer from that. But definitely when you're like in charge of, this is our country and I'm in charge of it, I think we have this arrogance of wanting to be able to beat our will into people. And basically, we just fight wars for companies, for resources. And these are resources that in a way we don't need. We don't need fossil fuels right now. There's other ways to get a lot of energy. And we could just stop using them entirely. Zero. And we would be all right. But it would be a big economic change. And there's some areas where economic change can happen really lightning fast, like music, the music industry. The internet just changed that right overnight, pretty much. And the whole old music industry pretty much fell away and is mostly gone today. That would be harder to do with the fossil fuel energy, fossil fuel industry, unless another country, for example, you know, put a lot of resources into making low-cost, say, solar energy or whatever, tidal energy, wind energy. And if they did, then, which is happening, actually. There's solar roadways in Iceland, is it, or Finland, or Sweden, somewhere, a Nordic place, Denmark, has roadways with solar power. So all these roadways that are just sitting there empty, you can drive over them, and then all day long while the sun is shining on them, they're collecting man, this is intense here. A little crying in the backgrounds here and there. So the point of all this is, today, I was registering people to vote, and I was able to do this because my son was in a school that is basically a public school that I don't directly pay for, that we all contribute towards, that we all pay some money and it exists. It's like a great service. And if I didn't have children, I would be excited that other people's children are being educated and are taken care of, and I'd be fine with that. I'm not super old, but I'm excited that when I am super old, or when my mother is now, and my father was before, while he was alive, that they were taken care of, so at least somewhat, by our society. And all of this is like up for grabs almost every election. And the thing is, it's constantly being eroded, because there's this view that we have finite resources. And one of those resources is money. And it's the money for the big companies. Our government largely exists to give contracts to companies that perform things for us. And then also to pay, to create structures and then pay people within those structures to do that stuff themselves. And there's all this talk about like how government is so inefficient, you know. But I think that business, if you look at it, and you could look, you know, some businesses are probably more efficient, but if you look at the services that are being offered and the amount of money that it takes to get that service, I think government almost always wins. Look at the postal service, for example. That's amazing. It's always cheaper than UPS and FedEx. That's incredible. Like, UPS and FedEx can also still exist, even though we have a public system. Healthcare could be the same way. Just because you make a public form of healthcare that everybody can have doesn't mean that other healthcares can't be more expensive and provide another service, you know, for that extra expense or whatever. There are all of these rhetorical dinosaurs that are walking around that don't reflect our reality that we still have to deal with. And it's not just on the Republican side. Like, that argument about government inefficiency is on the Republican side. And there is, sure, there's like, you go to the DMV and you have to wait forever to get a license and, you know, stuff like this. Like, this it can try one's patience. Or voting. You know, you want to go to vote. You have to wait for hours and hours in line. This is a type of gross inefficiency. It's a bureaucratic. Like, partly it just exists because the nature of bureaucracy is to complicate things with subroutines that have to be fulfilled in order for the main routine to be fulfilled. Like, oh, you can register to vote as long as you first sign up through my DMV for your little ID number. Oh, but that takes, then you have to verify through the email to get that, and then that takes this extra step, and then now you can sign up to vote. But now we're not going to actually register you to vote as DMV. We're just going to send it to the Board of Elections. So we can't tell you if you're actually registered or not. You just have to be sent there. All of this, instead of just type in your name, your ID information, send it, press a button. It's in the Board of Elections. And then you can see who you are, how you are, what you are. Done. You know, like, I don't know, buying something on Amazon. It could be like that. We could make things more like that. There's no identity question when you're buying something on Amazon. I mean, yeah, there are identity theft issues, but that's for money. I don't think that's happened much. That's not the type of fraud that happens in voting. The type of fraud is more general, and it's with ballots being destroyed or numbers being changed on voting machines with no accountability. Which the Supreme Court agreed was okay. They agreed that it's okay not to be able to look at the code on a voting machine, which is ridiculous. And they gutted the Voting Rights Act of, like, I think it was of 1964. So a lot of these issues that we're having now are recent issues because of the Supreme Court legislating from the bench. It's another one of these dinosaur rhetorical arguments that we have. The Republicans like to use it during a time when we had a fairly liberal court. Well, that, thank goodness we had that liberal court during a pretty conservative time otherwise in America. Or else we'd all be really screwed. So, the odd thing about all this is that it's difficult to understand what your interests are, and it's difficult to get your vote aligned with your interests and have those things both move forward towards a progressive humanitarian society. Getting all that to happen at once is super hard. So, why am I out registering people to vote? Why, you know, because normally I feel like it's all the machine. One candidate, I mean, the candidates are different, and Obama has made a huge difference. Just his style, his way of being, his rationality, his calmness has been a good example for America, for Americans, you know? And his race being an exception to the rule of you know, white men forever. I mean, he would have been denied the vote, like, 60 years ago. So all that's been great, but there's been a lot of, you know, there's a drone war that he's perpetuating, and then, despite good intentions, a lot of his progressive agenda has not been able to come to fruition because of total obstruction by the House and Senate. Which, I mean, that's our system. That's how it goes. And perhaps it's been abused. I know when I'm doing a performance, if there's somebody who doesn't want it to work, one person and 100 people who do, it can be hard to go on with just one person not wanting it to work. That one person can destabilize the imagination, the collective reason, our fantasy together can be broken by one person yelling or criticizing. And yet, sometimes that's great. In some ways, Bernie Sanders was that one person for a long time, trying to disrupt the business of giving public money to private interests and ignoring, for the most part, the citizenry, and kind of disrespecting the citizens who had created the system in the first place. And unfortunately, it is a lot like, you know, there's so many things that are like Nazi Germany, but until we can, or you could say Stalinist Russia. I mean, maybe that's an even better example. Even more people died. And he was less discriminate. Not only did millions of Jews die, but also millions of gypsies died, and millions of gays died, and millions, I mean, same with Hitler, but, you know, and then millions of soldiers died, millions of working class people died, millions of lots of groups of people died, exterminated under Stalin. So, the similarity, one similarity with what we do, is that people want to get ahead for their families. They want to create a better personal bubble that they and their families live in. And, you know, that's the incentive behind being a politician. And then after you struggle to serve your few terms of office, which must be massively disillusioning, you get there and very little of what you've said or talked about can probably ever happen. Like, Hillary Clinton was only able to pass 3 bills herself while she was in Congress, out of 716. I think that was the number. I was reading it on Wikipedia. And they were to name a highway, to designate a historical site, and to name a post office. That's what these are. One of our experienced front-running candidates for president was able to do while in office. And Bernie Sanders was able to pass a bunch of amendments and have an impact on veterans, like healthcare for veterans and things like that, a big impact. And affect the chain, like affect the regulations of banks and things like that with amendments. But even so, it's compared to the scale of what he would like to do, what he was able to do while he was in Congress, was much less than that. But it was still something, especially considering a Republican-controlled House and Senate for a lot of that time. So, what I'm coming to is that we have this system which we're now pointing out to each other is not working for most people. And really, it's just because the economy is bad and our currency has become completely devalued. And so our middle class's standard of living is getting lower rather than higher. And we had this wonderful period, like after World War II and to the 70s, where everybody's standard of living went up, kind of regardless of what they did as a job. Everybody could afford to rent somewhere and pay for college and pay it off and then buy cars and consume things and then have their stuff, and that worked. And that was a time when the wealth distribution of this country was a lot more even and a lot less skewed. And now we have this extremely skewed dispersion of wealth, and we kind of feel guilty for it, like it's our fault. Like, well, I should be a millionaire, and I will be one day. And the day that I am a millionaire, I don't want to have to, like, pay all my money back in taxes to the government because I've worked so hard, because I'm right now not a millionaire, and I've been doing this most of the time. So finally, when I'm a millionaire, please, let me keep it. Unfortunately, or fortunately, that's not really how millionaires are made. There's a couple millionaires that are made that way, through hard work and a new idea and innovation and stuff like that. But hold on one second.
Girl yesterday hit me.
Okay.
Okay, maybe you did something.
No, I didn't do anything. She's that pink girl yesterday with that.
Okay. He's a boy, actually. He was wearing a skirt, though, yesterday, my son. He likes to wear a skirt sometimes and paint his nails. Hey, Keith, I'm over here. I'm right here. How are you doing? Let me take your socks, okay?
Sand on me.
What happened?
That boy's going to stand on me.
Did you talk to him about it?
Yeah.
What did you say?
Don't do that.
Okay, say don't do that, please. And then... I'm going to grab my bag. Oh, millionaires. So the way millionaires are made now is by being already millionaires. And... or more. And if you just keep money in accounts, the money grows. It just grows on. Without you doing a job where you get a wage. And the tax on that growth is the least of any kind of tax. Or one of the least. Maybe it's like half of the tax that you get if you're like out there working a job. So we just automatically in our tax code favor people hoarding and sitting on wealth and then living off of the interest of that. Which in a way takes a lot of money out of our economy. Because now it's just sitting in an account. And you could say, well, that money is, the way it grows is that it's part of a stock market, you know? It's part of a bond trading thing. It's in real estate. But the effect of this is just to take all that stuff away from people. It's not accessible to us. You need so much to get in on a house or bonds or the stock market. You need so much to get in for it to be able to mean anything to you that basically these giant things which we spend so much time talking about on the news are only accessible to a fraction of all of the people in this country. And are we all aspiring for that? That's what we're doing. But it's somewhat absurd that all we talk about, or most of what we talk about, is this world that is just inaccessible to us simply because the system is so skewed. So thankfully there was a huge uprising and a movement in our country and actually around the world about this issue, about the issue of the public wealth being stolen by large institutions like banks and corporations who are just in it for the money. So much so that when like a self-conscious new entrepreneur of young money who feels socially responsible creates a company mission, the mission is don't be evil. Because it's so easy to be that way when all you're thinking about is money. Because ultimately, however you make money, it is coming from other people and is making them make money in some way. So it can be exciting to be a millionaire, make $1 million every month. But oddly, the more money you make as a millionaire, the more you're devaluing the currency for everyone else. And our country is full of taxes on the poor. Taxes that affect, like taxes on clothing or whatever, taxes on things that you buy. Those taxes affect people who don't have much money much more dramatically, percentage-wise, than they do somebody who has a huge amount of money. And the tax for them is very small, proportionately. So there's a few basic dinosaur arguments that are walking around that have helped to redistribute wealth in our country. And then they've been taken up in other countries, too. So it's not just happened in America. It's happened over a lot of the world. Or some countries have just started that way with all of the wealth in the hands of the very few, like Burma. There is almost no way to have a political uprising there because nobody has the resources to like bail each other out of jail, things like that. The civil rights movement was enabled by people of color having enough money to bail each other out of jail so that the movement wouldn't just stop when everybody was put in jail. So anyway, we've sort of come a long way since then. At the same time, the rhetoric of the moment is also completely the other way. Like, we're legalizing gay marriage, but then North Carolina is passing a law openly and proudly discriminating against LGBT people. Which I feel like we can all identify in that way. I mean, not to say that we don't have there aren't differences among people, but we can all in some way identify with a spectrum of gender identification, a spectrum of the role that you play, the gendered role that you play, a spectrum of sexuality. And it could be that people are very much on one end of the spectrum or another, but it's definitely, there are gradations, and there's all kinds of human experience in between. So it's important to vote, I think, right now, because the simple things that we want to do are just challenged. Like, all I want to do is have, you know, raise a son who is able to be educated, follow his creativity, his imagination, invent something amazing for the world, express himself, his unique self, in the way that is most appealing and effective for him. And it's very, very rare to find somebody who's able to do this in our world, the way it's constructed. Well, how do you make a living? That's the kind of next question, you know? And if we could relate making a living more closely to being yourself in the biggest possible way that you can. And, you know, some people might say, well, some people are monstrous. And them being themselves in a big way is being violent and destroying other things. And I guess it's possible to make that argument. I'm adding the caveat that you're yourself within a civil framework. Like, we're all human beings, we're sharing a planet, we share resources. Let's give one another the ethic that we impose on our children. I'm in a playground. All the parents here want their children to share. If they don't, they get embarrassed. Almost all of them. Not every single one, but many. Even here. I mean, this is the Upper East Side. I'm on an Upper East Side playground right now. Even here. Pretty much want them to share. And that is not a demand that we have of people past the age of 5, or certainly not past the age of, 20 or 18. You do not have to share everything. You don't have to share your toys. You don't have to share, if you have food, you don't have to share it with whoever walks up to you. It is your stuff. And they can go have their stuff, and they can do what they want with their stuff. So we don't all need to, we can still have our own stuff. But I think that this, the ethic of sharing and the idea that we're together in a place is one that we could try to encode more into our practice, into our profit, rather than the profit being the devaluation of the currency for everyone else. The more I get, the less meaningful your amount is. So I think that's possible, and there's one person who's really talking about that in a very direct way. And so that's why we're excited. That's why millions of people have given Bernie Sanders $27 and continue to. And that's also why he's not reported on any television station, even when he wins states. One thing I've noticed, just looking at articles, like on Google, when I'm Googling primary and I'm pressing refresh and I want to see what the results are, Clinton and Trump win. Bernie takes. And take a look at the headlines. They're almost always that way. He takes things. He grabs. But Trump wins and Hillary wins. And it's it's subtle, but it's very consistent. Bernie Sanders is the winner here, regardless of what happens next. He doesn't get one more vote. He is the winner. My God, this is a basically unknown person coming out of nowhere who nobody endorsed. None of the establishment wanted to have anything to do with this guy. He also got no media, unlike Trump, because you could say, well, some of those things are true of Trump, which they somewhat are. But, like, Trump was a reality TV star for, I think, 8 years or more. And besides just being always, you know, on his own reality TV show, even before there was one, you know, the show of Trump, So, and then Clinton, who, you know, there's a whole legacy. It's like, why don't we elect, why don't we just have a king and a queen and let their children rule? I mean, Clinton and Jeb Bush, it's like, okay, sure, let's just elect them, and then what about their children? Maybe they'll do a good job, too. So, this the monarchical, we have a monarchical candidate, a reality show candidate, both super famous, everybody knows who they are already, and then a totally unknown person, who I think is mostly, like, he's only been getting more votes the more people know about him. Whereas with both of the other, well, you could argue that Trump, it's also happening a little bit. But certainly with Hillary, it seems to have the other trend. The more people know, sort of sometimes the less she's getting. Hey there. So, today's the last day to vote. My son went to a school that is basically a public school that we all pay for. And I was able to go down and register people and do a performance outside at Washington Square Park, which I do for free. You can get paid, I think, to do this stuff if you sign up with a campaign or something. But I just wanted to register people, regardless of who they're voting for, regardless of party. Just let's all vote. Let's take this back. You know, it's the elderly who vote mostly. And I love old people. They're wise. But sometimes they can be out of touch with the current state of the world, you know? And I think that's often the case. But, you know, this election season, I don't know if Bernie's the oldest candidate. He and Hillary are about the same age, but one of the oldest candidates is speaking with one of the youngest voices. And I would rather vote for my children and their interests than the interests of the generation that came before. I would rather vote the future than this strange vision of the past, or the idea of compromise is necessary. We have to be pragmatic. We can only accomplish limited things. I mean, even that idea, that could be fine, it could be rational. But Hillary Clinton has changed her position on things based on their popularity in the moment, and then behind closed doors she does other stuff. So her, you know, her position on the war and the Patriot Act and the big banks and gay marriage, you know, all of these things have gone through these morphings and different iterations. And when she was a senator, she voted consistently along a conservative line that is nowhere near where, I mean, she and Bernie had just different votes on all of those major issues. And hers is along with the Republican majority. So if one wants a progressive candidate on the issues, it's not her. She's not the most progressive candidate. And if you want a candidate who's backed up by, you know, Walmart and Monsanto and Wall Street and these big interests that are responsible for a lot of the ills that we experience in our society today, well, those are the people who are backing her up. How is she going to deny them? But none of these people are backing up Bernie. He's got a free rein. And you could say, well, and therefore, nobody owes him. Nobody's going to do anything that he says. And, you know, Bush was like that when he was elected president, in a way. He wasn't even as much maybe of an outsider or whatever, but he was someone who people tried to ignore. Like the American people and everything, we just made fun of him and we tried to ignore him for a while. And then there was a crisis and we needed a president. And then he magically passed all kinds of stuff that would never pass normally. And then got re-voted in. The Patriot Act and all this stuff. And how does it get re-voted in? It gets re-voted in because the politicians who are voting it in the second time say, well, I'm not going to vote for it unless you give me $20 million for rebuilding after Hurricane Sandy. Or I'm not going to vote for it unless you give me $40 million for, you know, a sugar tax abatement for the these guys who have a sugar company over here, or I'm not going to vote unless you give the Koch brothers this certain deal, and then I will vote for it. So people sell their votes to each other, and in a way you could say, well, this is what politics is, this is compromise, this is how it works, it's always worked like this. But now it's so much about money. And it needs to be more about principles and people and what is better for ourselves collectively. And people can disagree on that, what is better. But at least, and hopefully, we can make those decisions more based on principle than just say whatever to get people out of the way and get the media off your back. I mean, the media are not on your back, for the most part, if you're going establishment. But whatever. Say whatever you need, and then move through and do whatever you want. And I can see how that'd be appealing. If I were a politician, I could see myself trying to maneuver that way. Being like, you know what, I'll just tell everybody one thing and then I'll do a different thing myself. I think it's extremely hard to be that transparent as we demand that our politicians be. I think it's very hard. This is hard to be that way as a person. You're watching something online, or and somebody comes up behind you and they're like, what are you watching? And you can tell them, or maybe you don't want to be judged, and so maybe you don't tell them, and then, you know, and there's privacy, there's transparency, like these things are complicated. I can understand why these people have trouble, like, being the thing that we ask them to be as the electorate. And yet, I think it's a very different thing being a political personage. It's almost like acting. It's like playing some strange role. Oh, I think Keats has to go to the bathroom. Hey, Keats, you need to go to the bathroom? Okay. You go poopy or pee?
Pee. Pee-pee.
How were you doing? What were you playing over there?
Don't bathroom.
Oh, Keats, you have to pee or poop? Okay, stand on my feet because it's so much urine on the ground. I don't want you to get urine on your feet. Okay. Tell me about your games so far.
My games were about Star Wars and I was fighting with Anakin.
Wow, and what character were you?
The yellow robot.
Ooh, okay. You were playing yellow robots. How many times did you fall down?
I died.
Wow, lots of times or just one or two?
One.
One. Okay.
Because the yellow robots, they start and then they die. This one time.
Oh, I see. That makes sense. Do you want to? Are you all done?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And are you playing with some other boys or girls?
Boys.
Okay, great.
Both. Yeah, those two.
That's great. Do you think there's much of a difference between boys and girls?
Yeah.
What's the main difference?
Because they are so different because they are mixed together.
Okay.
Together.
Okay, great. All right. Playing with Keats outside. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. We are going to change the world. Right? We have to. I mean, it's not so bad. And yet it is. It depends on how you look at it and who you are and where you're looking from. So instead of making just a few safe spots in the world, like clean water, no bombs exploding, instead of just a few, let's have many, many, many. I think it should be so expensive to make bombs and then nobody wants to buy them. It'd be great if we could create that environment. Like, oh, you're gonna make a bomb? Oh, man. That costs $1 billion to make one bomb. And then you can sell it for $5. Who's gonna do that, you know? Oh, let me just use names. Wouldn't it be great if countries, they have a dispute, and they just debate each other, and then if that doesn't work, they just call each other names. And that's the extent of it. I think that used to happen, kind of, ceremonial battle. You don't really want to kill people. I think especially when there were small tribes or smaller groups. Tribes is a very problematic term. term, I think. I would like to talk about America in terms of tribes, because it's so suspect how we talk about the rest of the world as tribal, tribal this, tribal that. Yeah, like the Burning Man tribe. Well, that is a term that we use sometimes. Why is that? Is this because it's hot in the desert and people take off more of their clothes and so? But it's not just that. It's also to take that, which is a beautiful, fairly, like egalitarian type of social situation, and diss it slightly for being primitive, or celebrate it for being primitive. It kind of depends on your view of primitive, I guess. And primitive is a bit of an evaluation too. Like, a tribe doesn't need to be primitive. A tribe is just a way of organizing, right? A loose collection of families.
And the pink sword was chasing me.
Well, that sounds fun, but how was it for you?
Not good.
Was she scary or dangerous? What did you think?
Scary.
You want to talk to her about it?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll come with you.
Talk to her about her?
Well, let's just go together, and why don't you talk to her first, and I'll just be near you, okay?
Okay.
They have interesting dilemmas, these little kids. Like, it's very hard to know sometimes what is concerning and what is not. But now Keith is concerned that somebody's gotten hurt, and he's talking to her. She's looking at her brother's foot, and now Keats is touching his foot, checking it out. And they're kind of evaluating what could be going on here. And then they moved on to playing with the sand right near there. And the girl that Keats has a dispute with seems like a leader. And has an older brother, and is complaining that somebody doesn't want to play with her. It can be helpful to have neutral parties. Parents are not exactly neutral. Well, I guess they're highly not neutral. But if you combine two not neutral parents together, you sometimes get order. Which is maybe one of the ideas behind our system. I hope you're voting. Why not? It's exciting. It's exciting because there's one or two votes types that would be really wild if they came true. One of my hopes now, I think it's a hope, with our election system, is that we'll do away with the party control. And it's a mixed bag, you know, because I think that there's like a lot of research to show that when we're given more than seven choices, and this research comes out of course, people trying to sell things in like grocery stores and department stores and stuff. But when we're given more than seven choices, we just break down and we can't choose at all. And so, like, Hillary versus Bernie has been a focused type of situation, even though most people don't know who Bernie is. Not even most anymore, but still a lot of people don't. 30 or 40%. And he's not as much in their consciousness. Like, for me, he's an everyday consciousness. Because I'm on Facebook and I see him there. And that's the main source of news for me. But other people's main source of news, and that, you know, that's sort of curated by who I happen to know. But yeah, other people's sources, like the front page of Yahoo or Hotmail or whatever, CNN or, you know, any of those. And they're constantly talking about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and they almost never talk about Bernie Sanders. I saw an article today, like way down the page on Yahoo, because his campaign is suing the Democratic National Committee for withholding some information for a period of time, voter information. And that's like a small story compared to the crazy number of people who keep showing up at his rallies, like tens of thousands of people, dwarfing Trump's rallies. I mean, nobody, unfortunately, shows up to see Hillary Clinton. In all of the caucuses, not every single one, but in most of them, I think he's won them all except for one, which he tied. That's the caucuses, in a way, are like, you feel that they're hard to manipulate because the people have to show up and they get counted there in person together. So it feels like a more true account of support. But also they're in certain states that have maybe different demographics, different amounts of voter information. I mean, that should be a demographic, like high amount of voter information or low amount of voter information, and who do you vote for based on that? Because I think his largest hurdle is he's just getting known by people fast enough that they can choose him in the primary so that they'll have a chance to choose him in the general. Because, you know, if they finally get to know him at the end of the primary process, it's too late at that point. And even if they want him, then they won't be able to choose him. So I feel good this season. I did what I could to get us all voting, because I feel like the more of us vote, just the better things will be. I feel like if everyone voted, like 100% voting, we would have a different world. It wouldn't be as stuck in the past, consistently stuck in the past, as it is. We'd just be faster to progress socially, according to like a humanitarian type of viewpoint. I feel like this is a viewpoint that transcends the parties, ultimately. Like, who doesn't want veterans to have health care when they come back from serving the country in wars? I mean, you could make twisted arguments for not giving benefits so that then wars are not fought or whatever, but that's, you know. Like, or children. Children's a good example. And the funny thing about this stuff is that if you're against government, quote, then you can, it's a kind of a funny way of justifying taking public money and giving it to private interests. But if you're really against government, you should just take public money and just give it back to the public, which does not ever happen under Republican leadership. So I've always thought it's kind of funny, like, in a way, if you're a Republican, you should vote for a Democratic president. Because they'll actually keep the budget in check. Like, that's what they've done historically, if you just look at the data. And then if you're progressive, I mean, I don't know who you vote for, but you're mainly concerned with the Supreme Court. So you've got to make sure that whoever you got is appointing people who are strong to the Supreme Court. And that's one thing Obama's done, I think, pretty well. This latest appointment, I don't know. But he's appointed a lot of progressive judges. And the lower courts have had better decisions as a result. Now, the Supreme Court, until Scalia passed away, was still pretty conservative and made a lot of disastrous decisions. You know, like Citizens United and also gutting the Voting Rights Act. And they just made all of our lives more miserable and, like, the country more controversial. Like, wouldn't it be nice if you just sign up to vote and you just vote and that's what that is? Well, voting has always been contested. Like, I think Truman, you know, I read the book Truman, and it sounded like politics then was, like, super intense. Like, whole neighborhoods would vote a certain way based on a kind of strong-arming by a few sort of, I don't know, protector-type dudes who would go around and sew up the neighborhood and then try to give back to them in some way. Like any of these offices, because there's so much money that comes into government, then any of these offices would be possible to corrupt. Well, you could say, well, that's a reason just to not have it at all in the first place. But the problem with not having it at all is that then you just don't get those services, because there's really no incentive for the free market as it were, the free market, which we don't have. We have a subsidized market for giant companies.
Now tumbling the slide with sand.
And what do you want to happen?
I want people to slide down.
Well, that makes sense. Maybe you can ask them to leave part of it uncovered for you to slide down. Do you want to slide in the sand? That also might be fun.
I'll slide on do slide to the all off. To the one slide all the way down.
Well, you probably, since they're spending so much time covering it, you probably can't just slide down. But maybe if you ask them to have a part of it where you can slide down. Here he goes. Now he's re-entered the sand pit, and he's talking to the boy in the multicolored striped shirt about this issue. The boy is crying. I'm not sure why. I've looked away. I didn't see it. Hopefully it was not my son. That's the terror that you have. It's like that your son attacked the person. And he's holding a stick. I don't think he did anything. Boy looks okay. He doesn't look guilty. Turn away for a split second. And the trust. Like, wouldn't it just be nice if we trusted? We could just trust our government. Like, oh, we voted for these people. This is what they said. That's what they'll do. It's almost like you'd rather have a robot. A robot who would be programmed. But the problem with that is that the solution might not be anything that's being talked about. The issues get talked about in a skewed way often. Pardon me? They're not listening. Well, they might just have a different idea. And they might not want to do your idea. By the way, when you're talking to them and stuff, you might want to put the stick down because that can seem like dangerous. What'd you say? He's using a stick as a little gun, which is like a way of pointing at things. That's one. The funny thing is, I played with guns a lot as a kid too. I think it's one route to pacifism, is learning about guns and playing with them, and then later realizing they're not a toy. Yeah, so these kids have spent all this time, but now the ones who were loading up the slide moved away and started to push it down. Oh, now he's pushing it back up again as one of the little girls is like running over. He's doing a little bit of both. Seems good. Seems to be working itself out. You're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Fun with Fritz. This is an election year. I've been kind of quietly talking to you while watching Keats in the playground. I just came from a performance in Washington Square Park, registering people to vote on this last day before. It's actually a long time before the election, but this is the last day to register. And hey, Keats, how are you?
They were throwing sand at me.
I was watching. It didn't seem so bad.
Because I didn't like that.
Well, you can say, if they're doing anything like that, you can say, please stop. So, life is amazing. And let's just make our framework a little more amazing. I think we have reached a moment when, oh.
Sand in my eye.
What?
You sand my eye.
Who did?
Them.
Which one?
That duo. He almost threw sand in my eye.
Well, that's not good at all.
He almost did.
Well, what do you think? You have a couple choices. You can talk to her about it. You can play in a different place. You can try to get somebody else to play with you so that you're not so vulnerable just alone, you know? Or you can bring me over nearby And maybe I'll be there and it won't happen as often?
Somewhere else.
You want to play somewhere else? Okay.
Yeah.
You want to play on the big toy over here?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that. You've been listening to Fun with Fritz. I wonder what you think. Have you gotten into fights with people on Facebook over your political views? I think I've lost 105 friends, which was like 4% or something of my Facebook friends. But I stayed friends with some people who are supporting every different candidate, pretty much, or at least the main ones. And I've gotten into, like, backs and forth with some of them, which I think is positive. I mean, sometimes you get emotional, and you see that they've responded to you, and that you don't want to read it. But other times, you're excited that you've stayed friends, that you're still talking to one another, and that you, yeah, and that you still exist. A lot of people from high school and junior high, like, I know their politics now this year, which I didn't really before, but I remembered their personalities from that time. And sometimes the personalities correspond the way you would think with politics, like in the obnoxious fun party kid, you know, ends up being conservative. And then, although, like, I'm now the obnoxious fun party kid, and I'm on the other side of that. And then maybe the like one of your crushes who, like, moved around the world and then was briefly part of some kind of pyramid scheme or something, ends up being, like, a really rational, wonderful voice of progress, I guess. Anyway, it's interesting to discover this. Or then there's... I've gotten the comments, like, from, like, really nasty comments. I'll post something, and then somebody will just, like, type, stop. And it's somebody I don't know. Like, I mean, we are friends, but we just really don't know each other. It's obvious to both of us. We don't know who we are. But their politics are different than mine, and they want to complicate my post. Like, I think I posted, why vote for the lesser of two evils when you can vote for the good? And maybe that's obnoxious to people who really support Hillary, because she doesn't seem like an evil at all. And I don't think that she specifically herself is an evil, but her, like, the cadre of people around her are the same people that are responsible for a lot of what has happened. They're, like, they're either literally the same people, you know, like, left over from the sort of neoliberal trickle-down economics model, or they're from the same companies. And I just don't, I mean, and Obama kind of did this. I think he appointed somebody from Monsanto to the FDA and to be head of the FDA, and, like, there were a number of unfortunate appointments or like that. I just don't want that to happen again. Like, let's have an environmentalist appointed to be in charge of the EPA instead of somebody who's trying to close and destroy the EPA. Or same with the FCC. Like, let's have people who are trying to do their job and their work in a principled way rather than looking for a way to minimize how much public money goes to public services and trying to have all the public money go to private greed machines. So, that's it. There it is. Another thought I had is, what if everybody's rent was half of what it is right now? Everybody's rent was half, and then the expenses were also half, like the expenses for landlords, but everything else about the economy stayed the same. Except I think you'd have to change the... You'd have to sort of redistribute wealth a little bit, or you'd have to put a limit on, like, how much stuff you can buy. Because the reason the prices go up so high is that for some people there is no limit to the amount of money that they have. And so it can be very, very expensive to buy buildings and things like that because the money is there to buy them. it's just in the hands of a few. So you have, like, a lot of New York City being owned by, you know, say five big institutions, NYU being one of them.